Chapter 80. According to custom, stood ready to shake hands with her between the verses. They looked, not at each other, but at the London manager. Mr. Crummles died point blank at him, and when the two guards came in to take the body off after a very hard death, it was seen to open its eyes and glance at the London manager. At length the London manager was discovered to be asleep, and shortly after, that he woke up and went away, whereupon all the company fell foul of the unhappy comic countryman, declaring that his buffoonery was the sole cause, and Mr. Crummles said, that he had put up with it a long time, but that he really couldn't stand it any longer, and therefore would feel obliged by his looking out for another engagement. All this was the occasion of much amusement to Nicholas, whose only feeling upon the subject was one of sincere satisfaction that the great man went away before he appeared. He went through his part in the two last pieces as briskly as he could, and having been received with unbounded favor and unprecedented applause, so set the bills for next day, which had been printed an hour or two before, he took Smike's arm and walked home to bed. With the post next morning came a letter from Newman Knox, very inky, very short, very dirty, very small, and very mysterious, urging Nicholas to return to London instantly, not to lose an instant, to be there that night if possible. "I will," apostrophe said Nicholas. "Heaven knows I have remained here for the best, and sorely against my own will, but even now I may have dallied too long. What can have happened? Smike, my good fellow, here, take my purse. Put our things together, and pay what little debts we owe quick, and we shall be in time for the morning coach. I will only tell them that we are going, and will return to you immediately." Apostrophe, so saying, he took his hat, and hurrying away to the lodgings of Mr. Crummles, applied his hand to the knocker with such hearty goodwill that he awakened that gentleman, who was still in bed, and caused Mr. Bulph the pilot to take his morning's pipe very nearly out of his mouth in the extremity of his surprise. The door being opened, Nicholas ran upstairs without any ceremony, and bursting into the darkened sitting room on the one pair front, found that the two Master Crumleses had sprung out of the sofa bedstead, and were putting on their clothes with great rapidity, under the impression that it was the middle of the night, and the next house was on fire. Before he could undeceive them, Mr. Crummles came down in a flannel gown and nightcap, and to him Nicholas briefly explained that circumstances had occurred which rendered it necessary for him to repair to London immediately. "So goodbye," apostrophe said Nicholas. "Goodbye, goodbye," apostrophe. He was halfway downstairs before Mr. Crummles had sufficiently recovered his surprise to gasp out something about the posters. "I can't help it," apostrophe replied Nicholas. "Set whatever I may have earned this week against them, or if that will not repay you, say at once what will. Quick, quick." "Apostrophe, we'll cry quits about that," apostrophe returned Crummles. "But can't we have one last night more?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, not an hour, not a minute," apostrophe replied Nicholas, impatiently. "Won't you stop to say something to Mrs. Crummles?" Apostrophe, apostrophe asked the manager, following him down to the door. "I couldn't stop, if it were to prolong my life a score of years," apostrophe rejoined Nicholas. "Here, take my hand, and with it my hearty thanks. Oh, that I should have been fooling here," apostrophe, accompanying these words with an impatient stamp upon the ground, he tore himself from the manager's detaining grasp, and darting rapidly down the street, was out of sight in an instant. Dear me, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles, looking wistfully towards the point at which he had just disappeared. "If he only acted like that, what a deal of money he'd draw. He should have kept upon this circuit. He'd have been very useful to me. But he don't know what's good for him. He is an impetuous youth. Young men are rash, very rash. apostrophe, Mr. Crummles being in a moralizing mood, might possibly have moralized for some minutes longer if he had not mechanically put his hand towards his waistcoat pocket, where he was accustomed to keep his snuff. The absence of any pocket at all in the usual direction suddenly recalled to his recollection the fact that he had no waistcoat on, and this leading him to a contemplation of the extreme scantiness of his attire, he shut the door abruptly, and retired upstairs with great precipitation. Smike had made good speed, while Nicholas was absent, and with his help everything was soon ready for their departure. They scarcely stopped to take a morsel of breakfast, and in less than half an hour arrived at the coach office, quite out of breath with the haste they had made to reach it in time. There were yet a few minutes to spare, so, having secured the places, Nicholas hurried into a slop seller's hard by, and bought Smike a great coat. It would have been rather large for a substantial yeoman, but the shopman averring, and with considerable truth, that it was a most uncommon fit, Nicholas would have purchased it in his impatience, if it had been twice the size. As they hurried up to the coach, which was now in the open street and all ready for starting, Nicholas was not a little astonished to find himself suddenly clutched in a close and violent embrace, which nearly took him off his legs. Nor was his amazement at all lessened by hearing the voice of Mr. Crummles exclaim, "It is he, my friend!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, bless my heart, apostrophe, cried Nicholas, struggling in the manager's arms, "What are you about?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, the manager made no reply, but strained him to his breast again, exclaiming as he did so, "Farewell, my noble, my lion-hearted boy!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, in fact, Mr. Crummles, who could never lose any opportunity for professional display, had turned out for the express purpose of taking a public farewell of Nicholas, and to render it the more imposing, he was now, to that young gentleman's most profound annoyance, inflicting upon him a rapid succession of stage embraces, which, as everybody knows, are performed by the embracer's laying his or her chin on the shoulder of the object of affection, and looking over it. This Mr. Crummles did in the highest style of melodrama, pouring forth at the same time all the most dismal forms of farewell he could think of, out of the stock pieces. Nor was this all, for the elder Master Crummles was going through a similar ceremony with Smike, while Master Percy Crummles, with a very little second-hand camlet cloak, worn theatrically over his left shoulder, stood by, in the attitude of an attendant officer, waiting to convey the two victims to the scaffold. The lookers-on laughed very heartily, and as it was as well, to put a good face upon the matter, Nicholas laughed too when he had succeeded in disengaging himself, and rescuing the astonished Smike, climbed up to the coach roof after him, and kissed his hand in honor of the absent Mrs. Crummles as they rolled away. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.